Well, at last, I am coming your way from India.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown here in Mumbai, India, used to be known as Bombay in the West, and I'm looking out the window of my hotel after 3 days of wonderful ministry on my 24th trip here to India, looking out the window of this beautiful hotel where I'll be for several hours before ministering to pastors, just a small group of key pastors in the city, and then later in the night, actually early in the morning, flying out to Italy for what, interestingly, is my 24th trip to Italy for 2 days in Torino, or Turin, as we call it in the West. But as I look out the hotel room here, beautiful hotel, other hotels on the horizon, but straight down is just shacks. It's a picture of the contrast of India, this amazing country where I'm so privileged to serve year in, year out, and I've got some great edifying things to share with you. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed the guest hosting. 1 day with Dr. Frank Turek, 2 days with Dr. Alex McFarland and colleague, and then again tomorrow, Dr. Frank Turek, and then, God willing, Friday from Italy, answering your questions. So that'll be me back on Friday. So if you could just remember to pray for grace on the rest of the trip. It's kind of rigorous. You know, there's a lot of travel. There are different time zones. There are different climates. So here in India, it's kind of like winter in India, but maybe it's 80 degrees outside. It can be maybe 115 in the worst parts of the summer. But about 80 degrees here. And I left from the States where it was pretty much colder than that. And then from here, going to northern Italy, where I think it's going to be in the 30s. And then the time zone changes. You know, it takes hours, obviously, to fly here in a few flights. And then it's 10 and a half hours different from my normal Eastern Standard Time. And then when I go from here, it'll be 4.5 hours different from this. So 6 hours from stateside in Turin and then back home, where I look forward to coming your way live again this coming Monday. So thanks for praying. It is such a privilege to be here and serve with such faithful brothers and sisters. And always the special day, the last day of ministry, I minister to leaders in the morning, pastors, leaders, pour into them. And then in the afternoon, we do water baptisms. This is just a custom that we have. It's not people that have necessarily come to the Lord through our ministry or anything like that. It's just people that want to get baptized, and this is their time to do it. So I participate in those. And then at night, we have the graduation service for the discipleship training centers. Maybe about 50, 60 students graduating last night, and maybe another dozen men who were being officially ordained as pastors. But there are 4 different locations for the discipleship training schools, and some of the areas where they're based are really heavy Naxalite areas, Naxalites being radical, violent communists. And some of the guys that were graduating last night, they just look like young boys. I mean, they look closer in age to my grandsons that are 13, 6 weeks apart, 13 years old. They look closer in age to them than to a graduate from a ministry school. Some of them just look young, and they're Indian and from tribal areas and things like that. They may be smaller. But my friend Yesu Padam that leads the ministry here was telling me that often the Naxalites will take young men at that age. In fact, he was recruited when he was 11, even younger, before he knew the Lord. And he said, now we're getting them and sending them out to minister. And amazingly, because the ministry does such good, it helps people so much, raises their standard of living, some in just absolute horrific poverty and now have their needs met. They get education. They see what the Christian workers do, and they have given these workers permission to be in these areas. That's how they can minister and thrive. All right, I've got some great things to share with you. Thanks for joining me as I come your way from India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. Yes, the familiar voice you haven't heard for a few days as I've been traveling to India and ministering in India. And we've got our great guest host filling in for me. This is Michael Brown. Just flew out of Vishakhapatnam, that is Vizag for short, in Andhra Pradesh, so the state of Andhra, southeast India. My 24th time there in 24 years. The ministry there planted over 7,000 churches, especially in tribal regions, regions that used to be virtually completely unreached, now completely reached, meaning in every village there was a gospel preaching church. Amazing work. The school they have has over 700 students in it now, including 150 from the children's home. I remember a few years ago when the kids got cots. So for the first time in their lives, they didn't have to sleep on the concrete floor. Instead, they now had cots with mattresses. But the amazing thing about these little kids and the kids in the children's home, so they're either orphans with both parents or one parent, or their parents are pastors in tribal regions where it's virtually impossible to raise the kids. The nutrition is too poor. It's too dangerous. Some of the leaders have been beaten repeatedly. There's no way to educate the kids, so this is a further sacrifice they make to be separated from them so they can get good upbringing, education, healthy food, and things like that. And I remember these kids, though, sleeping on the floor. I took their pictures one night. We videotaped it. The joyful smiles, and I thought, man, they are so much more content than we are in the West. And all they had was in a little cubby in the wall. I mean, a little cubby hole. That was all their earthly possessions. Maybe a change of clothes and a couple other things. And they were joyful and contented. And now they're, some are doctors in America. Some are pastors in India. They've graduated. They're gone on doing God's will. And amazingly, the kids that have been through the children's home, this is hundreds, thousands of kids who've been through the children's home. Yesupadam told me that he does not know of a single one that's backslidden. I mean, you talk about being grounded for years and years and years in a healthy, wholesome, Jesus-exalting environment. Years and years and years growing up in the Word, growing up in prayer, growing up in worship, getting a godly Christian education, having great examples around you. And not the distractions of the world. Yeah, quite amazing. And they're thriving in the Lord today. So ministered in Vishakhapatnam, finished up last night, had a real early flight this morning, now over in Mumbai. I can't take calls because of the time of when I'm doing this now, but I am looking out my window in India and joined with you, one heart, one soul. Can I share something with you extraordinary that Yesupadam shared with us yesterday with tears? Again, if you've never heard his testimony, just go to our digital library, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, click on the digital library, and just type in the name Yesupadam. You say, well, that's easier said than done. Yeah, it's Y-E-S-U-P-A-D-A-M, one word, that's his name, Yesupadam, Y-E-S-U-P-A-D-A-M. Or if you want to listen to all the interviews that I've done with him over the years, go to the radio website, thelineoffire.org, and just click on listen. And in the archives there of our radio shows, just search, and you'll have several interviews we've done over the years. But he shared something with me last night that was incredible to hear. But first, let me step back and give you some background. I have seen a pattern over the years when ministries, when individuals have had a unique and special relationship with Israel, have been joined with the Jewish people, and that there's been a supernatural grace on them. It doesn't mean everything Israel does is right. It doesn't mean that standing with Israel means accepting all of Israel's decisions. It certainly means wanting to reach Jewish people with the gospel and not neglecting them. And I've seen churches, ministries, with extraordinary stories, and they say it's because of our relationship to Israel. It's because we give the first fruits of our funds to reach Jewish people in Israel. It's because God's called us to stand in solidarity with Israel. Doesn't mean that you don't care about the Palestinians. It doesn't mean, again, that everything Israel does is right, but there is this supernatural relationship. Okay, I'm going to get to Yesupam in a minute, but let me share a little background first. So the givingest church in America in terms of per capita, the most giving church in America, as far as churches that are on record, you know, larger churches and things like that, is Gateway Church, based in Grapevine, Texas, but with satellite campuses all around the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area. I've preached there a number of times, seen the miracle of grace on that ministry. I'm good friends with Pastor Robert Morris, who so wisely leads that congregation and teaches and preaches the word so faithfully. And when I first visited, well, actually when I first preached there 13 years ago, I had read Pastor Robert's book, The Blessed Life, about principles of generosity and things like that. I had heard some of the miracle stories of financial provision, and I thought to myself, okay, I wonder how much emphasis they put on money. I wonder how much they talk about money in the service to generate those kind of funds. And to my absolute astonishment, they didn't say a word about money during the service. They didn't even receive an offering. At the end of the service, one of the pastors said, if you're visiting, the way we give, we have boxes you can give on the way out. And that was it. I was stunned. Didn't even pass a plate. Well, Pastor Robert told me when I was with him, about 2 years ago now, when I was doing a service for him and we were talking, he said to me that Gateway was now giving $1 million a month to missions. He was staggered by it. He was blown away by God's grace on them. And if you read his book, The Blessed Life Today, he wrote an afterword to the book, so a final reflection. And he said, we analyzed why we are so supernaturally blessed financially. We concluded it is not our preaching. I'm paraphrasing the afterwards. It is not our preaching and teaching. It is not our care for our people. It is not our children's programs. They do everything with excellence. They're famous for that. He said, we concluded that it was due to our giving the first fruits of our missions funds to Israel and to help the Jewish people and to help Jewish ministry. And that's why we have been so supernaturally blessed. Incredible. All right. I've had the privilege of preaching at the largest mega church in Europe, Faith Church, led by Pastor Sándor Németh in Hungary, Budapest, Hungary, or Budapest, as they would say it. And I believe the membership is over 70,000 people. I believe they have more than 5,000 kids in their Christian school program throughout the nation. I believe they have over 600 students in their seminary, a 5 or 6 year seminary, which is recognized, accredited by the European Union. And it's an incredible work. They own the nation's fourth largest TV station, which is also the number one news station in the country. It's a secular station. They own it. It's still a secular station, but they also use it for gospel purposes. They air their service on Sunday mornings, and about 250,000 people watch on TV there in Hungary. It's extraordinary. And they have an incredible relationship with Israel. They've had Israeli ambassadors and leaders speak from their pulpit. They've had Elie Wiesel speak from their pulpit. And Pastor Sándor has a great relationship with the Israeli government. And I asked him, do you believe that there is a supernatural connection between the blessing of God on your church and your relationship with the nation of Israel? He goes, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He was quite sure that there was supernatural grace because of that. And last year, I visited the fastest growing church in the world, from what we understand, Pastor Satish Kumar in Hyderabad, who in 10 years went from 35 people to 120,000. They averaged 5,000 new visitors every week. I was there. I greeted the people and got to address them briefly. And 5 Sunday services, this massive facility that was built in 52 days. It's one of the most miraculous stories. I did an article about it when I came back that you could also read on our digital library. If you just search for Kumar, K-U-M-A-R, you'll find that. And to my joyful surprise, in Pastor Satish's office, there are two small flags sitting on his desk, one of Israel and one of India. Isn't that extraordinary? Why those two flags? And everyone is greeted upon entering with the words, Shalom. And I said that I believe that God was going to make a highway from Hyderabad to Jerusalem and Jerusalem to Hyderabad, something about the relationship between these cities and these nations. So I've seen that. I've seen that supernatural grace with this Israel connection with different ministries over the years. But Yesu Padam told me something last night that stunned me. When we come back, I want to share it with you right here on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Line of Fire from Mumbai, India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, coming away from India, I want to finish sharing what I was speaking about right before the break, and then just some amazing news to share with you. You probably got an email. If you're on our email list, you would have read about this via email today if you didn't hear me sharing some of this last week. But I've seen how God has supernaturally blessed different ministries as they have uniquely stood by Israel or prioritized supporting evangelism to the Jewish people or blessing the people of Israel. And Yesu Padam was talking with one of our grads who leads our fire work in Holland, leads a wonderful church and ministry school there in Holland. A wonderful brother with his wife and five kids and great team there. And Yesu Padam, my Indian friend, was telling Frank from Holland, who is here with us in India for a few days, that the reason God has so supernaturally blessed his ministry, that it has so exploded into this ministry that has touched people all over India, that has planted over 7,000 churches and built orphanages and hospitals and has now helped birth works in other nations that are doing incredible jobs. I mean, it's amazing to see what's happened. And here was this man who was an untouchable, who was an alcoholic, atheist, violent, Naxalite, communist when Jesus saved him when he was in his 20s. And he says the reason that they have been so supernaturally blessed is because of his relationship with me as a Jew and me coming there to the ministry every year. And he said it with tears. And I said to Frank, it's those tears that are the key to the success of that ministry, his heart of love for God and for people and his nation. And you know, that to me is the key. But he is sure, he is absolutely sure of it. And it's an interesting thing, friends. Back in 1995, that was my third of 24 trips there. 1995, it was a one-month trip. Nowadays, we can just come here for 3 or 4 days because of intensity of schedule. It was a one-month trip. Nancy had been with me on the previous two. She wasn't with me on this trip. And it was just a rough trip. It was a hard trip. Yesu Padam and I had some miscommunication. There was a lot of demonic pressure and attack. I was frustrated. He was frustrated. And I was a little upset. I got in the flesh. And it's you know, it could be trying. There's a lot of stuff going on. It could be trying. I got in the flesh. And we said, listen, let's talk with the other leaders. Let's sit down and talk together. Because I was just frustrated. And, you know, I wanted to go back home early. And you just, things weren't happening. I'm just telling you, I got in the flesh. I got frustrated. So Yesu Padam, he said, brother, God has brought us together, Jew and Gentile, in an eternal relationship. He saw the significance of it. He saw it, he felt it, and little did I know that I would be here basically 24 straight years. The year when there was a terrorist attack in Mumbai, I was about to fly in, and Yesu Padam said, you're an American, you're a Jew, don't come in. And then I went twice another year. So it's been 24 trips in 24 years. And I've presided over the graduation at their ministry school year in, year out. And here's what you have to understand. We do it now in December because that's when I come. They graduate in cap and gown, get their certificates. We lay hands on them, but they don't graduate for another few months. They go back to school. One year I was supposed to come in March, and we were doing their graduation then. And that's when they were literally graduating. And I was run down. I was unable to come. So we rescheduled for December of that year. And I asked Yesupanam when I saw him in the States during that summer, so how did graduation go? He said, we didn't have it, brother. They decided to wait until you come. And that's when I realized the significance of these trips. So we don't do big meetings anymore. We don't do big rallies with tens of thousands. There are challenges with foreigners doing that. I travel all the way over here. Of course, we pay our expenses. It's an expensive trip. And we come over here. And long journey and a lot of upheaval to do it. And we do it for a few hundred people. We do it for the family here out of relationship. And it's sacred. I count it a privilege and an honor to do it. And little did I think of the significance of a Jew and Gentile connected here for bringing the gospel to the nations. And amazingly, Yesupanam has even entertained Israeli leaders in his home. I mean, miracle of miracles. How in the world did that happen? There's just something supernatural. So on a regular basis, when we come to the end of a meeting, he asked me to pronounce the priestly benediction from number 6, Yivarechecha Adonai, Vishmarecha, the Lord bless you and keep you. Ya'er Adonai Palavelecha Vihunecha, the Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift his face upon you and grant you his peace. And that is a regular feature of many of the services. And I never fully realized until last night that he believes that is why they have been so supernaturally blessed, this Jew-Gentile connection. I'm sure their love for the Lord and sacrifice for the Lord is massive in that blessing. But perhaps our union is sacred in God's sight in that way. Of course, it's sacred in God's sight in many ways. All right, if you haven't heard, God has opened up 3 massive doors for us beginning in the new year. On massive international Christian TV, we're going to have 2 different programs, a 5-minute Ask Me Anything program where viewers from around the world will send in their questions, and there'll be a different one every day, 5 shows a week. And then a full preaching show, a half-hour show where I can pour my heart out and preach repentance and preach revival and preach holiness. And that will also air. That will be a once-a-week broadcast. And God has provided for all of the airtime and for most of the production costs, if you can believe that. And he's opened a 3rd door through a network that will basically get us into every home in Israel. And we have to do all this new program. So it's a massive amount of time and energy and effort. But we're recording brand new shows specifically talking to Israelis about Jesus, Yeshua. It's amazing. These are the biggest doors God has ever opened in my life in all these decades of ministry. And aside from the time and energy that we have to put into it, the funding we need is to finish off with some of the production costs and add a staff member. It's amazing how much God has provided. And so our immediate needs out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars are only tens of thousands. And we have an initial matching grant. The first 10,000 that comes in will be immediately doubled. All right. So right now, if you could help us today while we have this special opportunity, go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Just click on donate. Your one-time gift will be doubled, all right? If you can give 10 or 50 or 100 or 1,000, it'll be doubled. And you're going to help us walk through the biggest open doors God has ever set before us in our work of ministry to touch people around the world and to touch the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Will you help us today with a tax-deductible gift? It'd mean a lot to me as I minister right here in India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm here in India, Mumbai. I've got one more day here and then over to Italy. 3 days of ministry in Visakhapatnam, a day in Delhi en route over here, pastor's meeting in a little while, and then a late night flight into Charles de Gaulle and to France, Charles de Gaulle Airport, and then from there to Turin, or Torino, as it's called in Italy. This is Michael Brown, and I am delighted to be with you. I do hope you've been enjoying the guest hosts that have been filling in for me as I've been traveling and ministering in India. And look forward to answering your questions from Italy on Friday. I have a theme on my heart here in India that I want to communicate to you in the minutes ahead, and it is the theme of rest. 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 I'm going to come to that in a moment, but first I want to share an important spiritual principle with you. It's an amazing thing, but if you remember in 2 Samuel with David, there is a raid on Ziklag. This is a location of David's men and their wives and possessions. And what happens is raiders, while David and his men are away, raiders come in, plunder the area, take the women and children, take the goods. So David and his men come back. They're absolutely mortified. Can't believe what happened. Broken before the Lord over it. So they get some of the guys together. We're going to go after them. And not everyone was taken. So some of the men are going to stay with those that are back and stay with their possessions and things like that. So they go and they catch the raiders and they kill them and they take their spoils and they bring back their family that's been taken and they bring back the goods and they're going to start dividing them up among all the men. Someone said, well, wait, these guys stayed back. And we went and fought, so we get the lion's share of the goods. I mean, they shouldn't get it, right? Well, makes sense. But David said, no. And this basically becomes a principle. The ones that stay back get the same reward as the ones who go. In other words, it's teamwork. Everybody was doing a role. The ones that stayed back went on a vacation. They were on guard. They were doing what they were supposed to do. So if you are fulfilling your calling right now in your home country, well, I'm far away in India, so I've had to deal with the flights and the jet lag and the other challenges that come with international ministry. If you're one of our prayer warriors that support us in prayer, if you're one of our torchbearers, our monthly supporters that are the financial backbone of this ministry, if you're one who helps us with periodic one-time gifts as you're able, if you're one who serves our ministry in other capacities, shares what we do, goes out of your way to share our message with others, if that's you, you share in this reward. I'm here doing what I'm doing and stretching myself out, running my race for God with joy. What a privilege. And I've had the privilege of preaching the word, thousands of messages overseas. And I think I calculated I spent 3 years of my life overcoming jet lag with all the travel. What a joy and privilege. But I just want you to know, as we've had great fruit on this trip, as we've seen lives touched, as we've made a deposit again in new workers that are going to go out and plant churches and do the work of God, and we get to minister encouragement to those who preach the gospel and been beaten for it, been persecuted for it, you share in the reward. One day, we're going to stand before God, and God's going to divide up rewards for us, and we're going to be startled. When did I do this? When did I do that? Well, we did it together, and I'm going to be startled by what God does in his graciousness towards me as well. So thank you for your partnership in the gospel. Together, we are making a difference. Many, many lives are being touched.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for being part of our broadcast from India today, Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you, delighted to serve as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. The theme of rest. We come to the end of a busy year, many of you pushing hard with family, with work, with ministry responsibilities, with the weight of life upon you. And if you're running your race, hey, I'm running mine. And sure, look forward to winding down towards the end of the year, getting a little extra rest, catching up just on quiet things and time alone with God, and maybe getting some clutter cleared out and some extra family time. Hopefully many of you will be able to do that as well. But we are called to run our race, are we not? We are called to endure hardship as good soldiers of the Messiah. I mean, this is scriptural. We are called to be disciplined. We are called to persevere. And yet, God gives us rest. And you say, how do the two work together? I want to share a principle. I've been meditating on it here in India as well. And it's from Psalm 127. And it says this: unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. So the first thing is, you can try your hardest. You can push and push and push and push and push and push. If God's not in it, your best efforts are going to fall short. If God's not in it, your greatest efforts are going to fall short. You will not produce the work that you want to produce. You will not see the fruit that you want to see. And it doesn't matter how Herculean your sacrifices and your efforts are. If the Lord does not build a house, those who build it labor in vain. If the Lord does not watch over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain because he's not going to be able to protect it. Conversely, if the Lord does build a house, those who build it do not labor in vain. If the Lord does watch over the city, the watchman does not stay awake in vain. Now look at this. It is vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Let me read that in a couple of other translations. That was the ESV. King James: it is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. NIV: in vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Let me read from the NLT. It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning to late at night, anxiously working for food to eat, for God gives rest to his loved ones. New Jewish Version: in vain you rise early and stay up late, you who toil for the bread you eat, he provides as much for his loved ones while they sleep. The point here is that we can strive and try so hard to make things happen, make things work, produce, get the job done. And yet, when we go to sleep and rest, God continues to work on our behalf. Here, it would be like this. You want the best farm in the world. You want it to produce the best fruit and the best vegetables. And every morning you get up way before sunrise and you just walk around and look at every plant and every tree and you inspect it. And then you start to dig things up to make sure, okay, is this seed growing all right? Is this growing okay? And then you've got your sprinklers are supposed to go on at certain times of the day and the night. They run by themselves, but you stay up late to make sure those work. And at the end of the day, your neighbor, who's also a farmer, he's been working hard, he's been plowing, he's been sowing the seeds, he's been making sure things are going well, but he's sleeping at night and God's giving increase to his farm the same way. There is a place of rest, and I think that some of us sometimes are so eager to see God's work done. We're so eager to see the gospel go forward. We're so eager to see our kids solid in the Lord. We're so eager to see our business succeed. We're so eager to see things happen that are good and commendable. But we overwork. We push ourselves above and beyond. We don't find that place of rest. There's no Sabbath rest. There's no place of rest that we find in God. As a result of which, we burn ourselves out. I don't say this to condemn. There's so many devoted pastors and shepherds, and you care so much about your flock, and you've got limited budget, and you're trying to meet every need. And hey, only God can meet every need. Some years ago, I was talking to a friend of ours, a good friend of Nancy's and mine, and I said to her, you know, I try to answer emails from grads whenever they email day or night. I mean, if I see it, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I'm able to answer it, I'm going to stop if I can and answer it. And if it's a crazy time of the day or night, if I see it in the middle of the night, I wake up a little while and I see an email from them, I'm going to respond. I said, I want to be there for the grads all the time. And this friend said to us, Mike, only God is there all the time. So this is not an excuse for laziness. I mean, there's no possible way you could read the Bible and come away with an ethic of laziness. Just the book of Proverbs alone would demolish that mindset forever. But, there is a place of rest. You labor, you do your job, you fulfill your responsibilities, and you step back and, you rest. Yeah, the world is still in strife. Yeah, there's still people that need to be saved. Yeah, there's still things that need to be prayed for. Yeah, there's still people that need to be visited. Yeah, there's still a poor person that needs help and a starving person that needs help. We can't meet every need of every person 24/7. But we labor in vain when we push beyond the calling of God. And over the years, I've had to learn to discipline myself to rest. And not only is it rejuvenating, not only is it life-giving, not only does it give more energy so that after resting, you can run even more effectively, but it also causes you to lean even more on the Lord. It brings you to a place of greater faith and greater dependence because you're looking to Him to do what He can do. And what's fascinating is if you read the rest of the psalm, the focus is on sons, on a man's sons, and how they will basically fight his battles, and he can do what fathers do with the city gate and what elders do, and his sons can carry on the legacy. It's that same rest principle, if you get it, if you grasp it, if you can hear that, that you pour into others, and now they help carry that load so that it's not always and only on you. And then what does Jesus say? What does Yeshua say at the end of Matthew 11? It's a strategically positioned verse. There has been controversy, religious controversy over his ministry. He's been attacked. And you know, this is an ongoing theme. And there's controversy about, you know, John the Immerser, and what was he, who was he, and who are you? And Jesus begins to rebuke the cities that saw his great mighty miracles and didn't repent. And then he steps back and he thanks the Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that he's hidden these things from the wise and understanding, revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for such was your gracious will. This is pleasing in your sight. And then he goes on about all things have been handed to him by his Father and revelation from the Father. And it says in verse 28, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I'm gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, meaning my yoke fits just right, and my burden is light. The teachers of the law would speak of the yoke of the Torah, the yoke of the kingdom. He said, hey, take my yoke on you. And notice, this is the same Jesus who calls us to leave everything and follow him, the same Jesus that calls us to take up our cross, the same Jesus who doesn't tolerate our excuses. What does he say? Come to me and you'll find rest for your souls. And what follows immediately after? A battle over legalistic issues, a battle over Jewish traditions, which Jesus exposed as getting in the way of the spirit of the Sabbath. So he's saying, you want real Sabbath rest, you'll find it in me. It's fine to have a day of Sabbath rest, but the ultimate Sabbath rest is found in him. So here's an invitation. Come to that place of rest, of acceptance, of knowing your sins are forgiven, of knowing you're loved by the Father, of knowing it's his grace working in you that does the work and not your endless striving and running around like a chicken with its head cut off. And once you find that place of rest, breathe deep, learn to live in it. From that place of rest, run your race so as to win. I hope this has ministered to you as I share from India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In the last segment, I was reading to you from Psalm 127 and sharing some thoughts from there. I want to share some thoughts from Psalm 126. This is Michael Brown coming away from Mumbai, India. And please do pray for grace. Still have a meeting, one more meeting to do here in India to finish out my time here, and then the journey to Italy, and then several meetings in Italy. Sharing with young people, should be a large crowd of young Italian men and women, sharing together with my friend Avner Boski, who's on his way over from Israel, as we share with them the importance of Israel to them as believers. These could be breakthrough meetings in Italy. So please do pray for grace as I meet with pastors in Mumbai at a small closed meeting in a little while, and then the meetings in Italy that'll be Friday and Saturday, and God willing, I head home on Sunday. But some of you have prayed for things for years, and you have sown with tears, you have prayed with tears, you have given with tears, and I want to encourage you that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And Psalm 126 is a psalm with very, very different emotions. Very, very different emotions. Let's take a read through it. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, this is speaking of coming out of exile, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears will reap with shouts of joy. Why would you sow in tears? I've often thought about that, and I commented a little bit here and there over the years on it, but why would you sow in tears? Could be that most of your people are in exile, and you're there with very few others trying to produce a harvest for sustenance. Could be that the ground and the conditions are not conducive to sowing, and there just seems to be no hope for the future. Those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. So as we're getting closer and closer to the end of the year, I just want to encourage you that God is not deaf to your cries. God is not blind to your tears. It's not that we force him to do something that he doesn't want to do. But we are his co-workers, his fellow laborers. And because of that, he gives us the privilege of praying. He gives us the privilege of working together with him. He responds to our prayers. He calls us to fast. He calls us to seek him with brokenness and tears. And out of that, something wonderful, something glorious, something very, very special is birthed. And I want to encourage you that no prayer prayed in faith according to the will of God, not a single prayer is prayed in vain. If you pray to the Father, if you've prayed in faith, if you're praying according to the will of God, you can be sure those prayers are making a difference. tears that you've shed for loved ones, and pain and brokenness and agony of heart, those prayers have not been in vain. Those tears have not been shed in vain. And I was looking at journal entries when I was flying from, where was it, Chicago to Delhi in India this past Friday, going through some key journal entries over the last year and then noticing ones from some years earlier. And years back, I had been so terribly burdened to get the message out that God had given me. I had been so terribly burdened to reach more and more and more people with the message of the gospel and to see revival and to help spark moral and cultural revolution. And I was on my knees, I think it was late at night, and I cried out from the bottom of my heart, God, give me a voice. And yes, we had touched many people by that time and had a voice through preaching and teaching and a voice through writing, traveling and speaking. And yet I was so desperately burdened by the condition of the world and by the message that God had given me that I knew could help, that all I could do was cry out from the depth of my being. And I was stunned when I looked back at that some months ago and I realized voice, that's the thing. Wherever I go, people come up to me and say, thank you for being a voice. Thank you for being my voice. I mean, I hear it constantly from folks. Thanks for being our voice. And I'm introduced every day on the radio as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I say that to encourage you. God does pay attention. And most of the time, the bigger things, the better things, the most important things take the longest. Here I am, 61 years old, and going on 62 next March, feeling young, fresh, ready to run my race with even greater zeal in the days ahead. And it's so interesting that God is opening bigger doors now than a year ago, than 5 years ago, than 10 years ago, than 20 years ago. And he's just swung open these massive doors that are going to enable us on massive international Christian TV to reach people with powerful preached messages, to reach people with short teachings, and to reach into every home in Israel with the good news of the gospel. Three different doors on two different stations. I shared it earlier in the last half hour before this. I want to share it again with you. To me, just another sign of God's faithfulness in hearing the prayers, hearing our cries that have been lifted up to him these many years for revival, for the Great Commission, for the salvation of Israel, for moral and cultural revolution. And if you didn't hear the good news, the God has provided for the airtime. God has provided for much of the production. And now we have to add staff, we have to add some video equipment, and we will, and everything I mentioned now, plus we'll be able to put out even more on a daily basis on our own YouTube channel. So we're just asking you to partner with us. It's a sacred time, it's a sacred opportunity. And out of a budget of what could be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, there are tens of thousands that we have to meet right now. So it is incredible what God supernaturally provided. So if you could stand with us, I want to mention again that a pastor in his church graciously said the first 10,000 that comes in, we're going to double. So your gift of $50 becomes 100. Your gift of 100 becomes 200. Your gift of 1,000 becomes 2,000. Whatever you can do, no gift is too large or small. Go to the website, go to askdrbrown.org, click on donate, askdrbrown.org, click on donate. Or if you want a text to give, it's 929-CHANGE-1, 929-CHANGE-1. It's 929-242-6431 as we change the world together. 929-CHANGE-1. Type that in. Type in the amount you want to text and then send it along. And the dialogue box is real simple. Hey, what amazing days lie ahead. Thank you for standing with us. My bottom line today, you've prayed, you've wept, you've sown in tears. You will reap with joy. Well, at last, I am coming your way from India.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown here in Mumbai, India, used to be known as Bombay in the West, and I'm looking out the window of my hotel after 3 days of wonderful ministry on my 24th trip here to India. Looking out the window of this beautiful hotel where I'll be for several hours before ministering to pastors, just a small group of key pastors in the city, and then later in the night, actually early in the morning, flying out to Italy for what, interestingly, is my 24th trip to Italy for 2 days in Torino, or Turin, as we call it in the West. But as I look out the hotel room here, beautiful hotel, other hotels on the horizon, but straight down is just shacks. It's a picture of the contrast of India, this amazing country where I'm so privileged to serve year in, year out, and I've got some great edifying things to share with you. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed the guest hosting. 1 day with Dr. Frank Turek, 2 days with Dr. Alex McFarland and colleague, and then again tomorrow, Dr. Frank Turek, and then, God willing, Friday from Italy, answering your questions. So that'll be me back on Friday. So if you could just remember to pray for grace on the rest of the trip. It's kind of rigorous. You know, there's a lot of travel. There are different time zones. There are different climates. So here in India, it's kind of like winter in India, but maybe it's 80 degrees outside. It can be maybe 115 in the worst parts of the summer. But about 80 degrees here, and I left from the States where it was pretty much colder than that. And then from here, it's going to northern Italy where I think it's going to be in the 30s. And then the time zone changes. You know, it takes hours, obviously, to fly here in a few flights. And then it's 10 and a half hours different from my normal Eastern Standard Time. And then when I go from here, it'll be 4.5 hours different from this. So 6 hours from stateside in Turin and then back home, where I look forward to coming your way live again this coming Monday. So thanks for praying. It is such a privilege to be here and serve with such faithful brothers and sisters. And always the special day, the last day of ministry, I minister to leaders in the morning, pastors, leaders, pour into them. And then in the afternoon, we do water baptisms. This is just a custom that we have. It's not people that have necessarily come to the Lord through our ministry or anything like that. It's just people that want to get baptized, and this is their time to do it. So I participate in those. And then at night, we have the graduation service for the discipleship training centers. Maybe about 50, 60 students graduating last night, and maybe another dozen men who were being officially ordained as pastors. But there are 4 different locations for the discipleship training schools, and some of the areas where they're based are really heavy Naxalite areas, Naxalites being radical, violent communists. And some of the guys that were graduating last night, they just look like young boys. I mean, they look closer in age to my grandsons that are 13, 6 weeks apart, 13 years old. They look closer in age to them than to a graduate from a ministry school. Some of them just look young, and they're Indian and from tribal areas and things like that. They may be smaller. But my friend Yesu Padam that leads the ministry here was telling me that often the Naxalites will take young men at that age. In fact, he was recruited when he was 11, even younger, before he knew the Lord. And he said, now we're getting them and sending them out to minister. And amazingly, because the ministry does such good, it helps people so much, raises their standard of living, some in just absolute horrific poverty and now have their needs met. They get education. They see what the Christian workers do, and they have given these workers permission to be in these areas. That's how they can minister and thrive. All right, I've got some great things to share with you. Thanks for joining me as I come your way from India.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. Yes, the familiar voice you haven't heard for a few days as I've been traveling to India and ministering in India. And we've got our great guest host filling in for me. This is Michael Brown. Just flew out of Vishakhapatnam, that is Vizag for short, in Andhra Pradesh, so the state of Andhra, southeast India. My 24th time there in 24 years. The ministry there planted over 7,000 churches, especially in tribal regions, regions that used to be virtually completely unreached, now completely reached, meaning in every village there was a gospel-preaching church. Amazing work. The school they have has over 700 students in it now, including 150 from the children's home. I remember a few years ago when the kids got cots. So for the first time in their lives, they didn't have to sleep on the concrete floor. Instead, they now had cots with mattresses. But the amazing thing about these little kids and the kids in the children's home, so they're either orphans with both parents or one parent, or their parents are pastors in tribal regions where it's virtually impossible to raise the kids. The nutrition is too poor. It's too dangerous. Some of the leaders have been beaten repeatedly. There's no way to educate the kids, so this is a further sacrifice they make to be separated from them so they can get good upbringing, education, healthy food, and things like that. And I remember these kids, though, sleeping on the floor. I took their pictures one night. We videotaped it. The joyful smiles, and I thought, man, they are so much more content than we are in the West. And all they had was in a little cubby in the wall. I mean, a little cubby hole. That was all their earthly possessions. Maybe a change of clothes and a couple other things. And they were joyful and contented. And now they're, some are doctors in America. Some are pastors in India. They've graduated. They're gone on doing God's will. And amazingly, the kids that have been through the children's home, this is hundreds, thousands of kids who've been through the children's home. Yesupadam told me that he does not know of a single one that's backslidden. I mean, you talk about being grounded for years and years and years in a healthy, wholesome, Jesus-exalting environment. Years and years and years growing up in the Word, growing up in prayer, growing up in worship, getting a godly Christian education, having great examples around you. And not the distractions of the world. Yeah, quite amazing. And they're thriving in the Lord today. So ministered in Vishakhapatnam, finished up last night, had a real early flight this morning, now over in Mumbai. I can't take calls because of the time of when I'm doing this now, but I am looking out my window in India and joined with you, one heart, one soul. Can I share something with you extraordinary that Yesupadam shared with us yesterday with tears? Again, if you've never heard his testimony, just go to our digital library, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, click on the digital library, and just type in the name Yesupadam. You say, well, that's easier said than done. Yeah, it's Y-E-S-U-P-A-D-A-M, one word, that's his name, Yesupadam, Y-E-S-U-P-A-D-A-M. Or if you want to listen to all the interviews that I've done with him over the years, go to the radio website, thelineoffire.org, and just click on listen. And in the archives there of our radio shows, just search, and you'll have several interviews we've done over the years. But he shared something with me last night that was incredible to hear. But first, let me step back and give you some background. I have seen a pattern over the years when ministries, when individuals have had a unique and special relationship with Israel, have been joined with the Jewish people, and that there's been a supernatural grace on them. It doesn't mean everything Israel does is right. It doesn't mean that standing with Israel means accepting all of Israel's decisions. It certainly means wanting to reach Jewish people with the gospel and not neglecting them. And I've seen churches, ministries, with extraordinary stories, and they say it's because of our relationship to Israel. It's because we give the first fruits of our funds to reach Jewish people in Israel. It's because God's called us to stand in solidarity with Israel. Doesn't mean that you don't care about the Palestinians. It doesn't mean, again, that everything Israel does is right, but there is this supernatural relationship. Okay, I'm going to get to Yesupam in a minute, but let me share a little background first. So the givingest church in America in terms of per capita, the most giving church in America, as far as churches that are on record, you know, larger churches and things like that, is Gateway Church, based in Grapevine, Texas, but with satellite campuses all around the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area. I've preached there a number of times, seen the miracle of grace on that ministry. I'm good friends with Pastor Robert Morris, who so wisely leads that congregation and teaches and preaches the word so faithfully. And when I first visited, well, actually when I first preached there 13 years ago, I had read Pastor Robert's book, The Blessed Life, about principles of generosity and things like that. I had heard some of the miracle stories of financial provision, and I thought to myself, okay, I wonder how much emphasis they put on money. I wonder how much they talk about money in the service to generate those kind of funds. And to my absolute astonishment, they didn't say a word about money during the service. They didn't even receive an offering. At the end of the service, one of the pastors said, if you're visiting, the way we give, we have boxes you can give on the way out. And that was it. I was stunned. Didn't even pass a plate. Well, Pastor Robert told me when I was with him, about 2 years ago now, when I was doing a service for him and we were talking, he said to me that Gateway was now giving $1 million a month to missions. He was staggered by it. He was blown away by God's grace on them. And if you read his book, The Blessed Life Today, he wrote an afterword to the book, so a final reflection. And he said, we analyzed why we are so supernaturally blessed financially. We concluded it is not our preaching. I'm paraphrasing the afterwards. It is not our preaching and teaching. It is not our care for our people. It is not our children's programs. They do everything with excellence. They're famous for that. He said, we concluded that it was due to our giving the first fruits of our missions funds to Israel and to help the Jewish people and to help Jewish ministry. And that's why we have been so supernaturally blessed. Incredible. All right. I've had the privilege of preaching at the largest mega church in Europe, Faith Church, led by Pastor Sándor Németh in Hungary, Budapest, Hungary, or Budapest, as they would say it. And I believe the membership is over 70,000 people. I believe they have more than 5,000 kids in their Christian school program throughout the nation. I believe they have over 600 students in their seminary, a 5 or 6 year seminary, which is recognized, accredited by the European Union. And it's an incredible work. They own the nation's fourth largest TV station, which is also the number one news station in the country. It's a secular station. They own it. It's still a secular station, but they also use it for gospel purposes. They air their service on Sunday mornings, and about 250,000 people watch on TV there in Hungary. It's extraordinary. And they have an incredible relationship with Israel. They've had Israeli ambassadors and leaders speak from their pulpit. They've had Elie Wiesel speak from their pulpit. And Pastor Sándor has a great relationship with the Israeli government. And I asked him, do you believe that there is a supernatural connection between the blessing of God on your church and your relationship with the nation of Israel? He goes, oh, absolutely, absolutely. He was quite sure that there was supernatural grace because of that. And last year, I visited the fastest growing church in the world, from what we understand, Pastor Satish Kumar in Hyderabad, who in 10 years went from 35 people to 120,000. They averaged 5,000 new visitors every week. I was there. I greeted the people and got to address them briefly. And 5 Sunday services, this massive facility that was built in 52 days. It's one of the most miraculous stories. I did an article about it when I came back that you could also read on our digital library. If you just search for Kumar, K-U-M-A-R, you'll find that. And to my joyful surprise, in Pastor Satish's office, there are two small flags sitting on his desk, one of Israel and one of India. Isn't that extraordinary? Why those two flags? And everyone is greeted upon entering with the words, Shalom. And I said that I believe that God was going to make a highway from Hyderabad to Jerusalem and Jerusalem to Hyderabad, something about the relationship between these cities and these nations. So I've seen that. I've seen that supernatural grace with this Israel connection with different ministries over the years. But Yesu Padam told me something last night that stunned me. When we come back, I want to share it with you right here on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Line of Fire from Mumbai, India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, coming away from India. I want to finish sharing what I was speaking about right before the break, and then just some amazing news to share with you. You probably got an email. If you're on our email list, you would have read about this via email today if you didn't hear me sharing some of this last week. But I've seen how God has supernaturally blessed different ministries as they have uniquely stood by Israel or prioritized supporting evangelism to the Jewish people or blessing the people of Israel. And Yesu Padam was talking with one of our grads who leads our fire work in Holland, leads a wonderful church and ministry school there in Holland. A wonderful brother with his wife and five kids and great team there. And Yesu Padam, my Indian friend, was telling Frank from Holland, who is here with us in India for a few days, that the reason God has so supernaturally blessed his ministry, that it has so exploded into this ministry that has touched people all over India, that has planted over 7,000 churches and built orphanages and hospitals and has now helped birth works in other nations that are doing incredible jobs. I mean, it's amazing to see what's happened. And here was this man who was an untouchable, who was an alcoholic, atheist, violent, Naxalite, communist when Jesus saved him when he was in his 20s. And he says the reason that they have been so supernaturally blessed is because of his relationship with me as a Jew and me coming there to the ministry every year. And he said it with tears. And I said to Frank, it's those tears that are the key to the success of that ministry, his heart of love for God and for people and his nation. And you know, that to me is the key. But he is sure, he is absolutely sure of it. And it's an interesting thing, friends. Back in 1995, that was my third of 24 trips there. 1995, it was a one-month trip. Nowadays, we can just come here for 3 or 4 days because of intensity of schedule. It was a one-month trip. Nancy had been with me on the previous two. She wasn't with me on this trip. And it was just a rough trip. It was a hard trip. Yesu Padam and I had some miscommunication. There was a lot of demonic pressure and attack. I was frustrated. He was frustrated. And I was a little upset. I got in the flesh. And it's you know, it could be trying. There's a lot of stuff going on. It could be trying. I got in the flesh. And we said, listen, let's talk with the other leaders. Let's sit down and talk together. Because I was just frustrated. And, you know, I wanted to go back home early. And you just, things weren't happening. I'm just telling you, I got in the flesh. I got frustrated. So Yesu Padam, he said, brother, God has brought us together, Jew and Gentile, in an eternal relationship. He saw the significance of it. He saw it, he felt it, and little did I know that I would be here basically 24 straight years. The year when there was a terrorist attack in Mumbai, I was about to fly in, and Yesu Padam said, you're an American, you're a Jew, don't come in. And then I went twice another year. So it's been 24 trips in 24 years. And I've presided over the graduation at their ministry school year in, year out. And here's what you have to understand. We do it now in December because that's when I come. They graduate in cap and gown, get their certificates, we lay hands on them, but they don't graduate for another few months. They go back to school. One year I was supposed to come in March and we were doing their graduation then, and that's when they were literally graduating. And I was run down, I was unable to come, so we rescheduled for December of that year. And I asked Yesu Panam, when I saw him in the States during that summer, so how did graduation go? He said, we didn't have it, brother. They decided to wait until you come. And that's when I realized the significance of these trips. So we don't do big meetings anymore. We don't do big rallies with tens of thousands. There are challenges with foreigners doing that. I travel all the way over here. Of course, we pay our expenses. It's an expensive trip. And we come over here, and long journey and a lot of upheaval to do it. And we do it for a few hundred people. We do it for the family here out of relationship, and it's sacred. I count it a privilege and an honor to do it. And little did I think of the significance of a Jew and Gentile connected here for bringing the gospel to the nations. And amazingly, Yesu Panam has even entertained Israeli leaders in his home. I mean, miracle of miracles. How in the world did that happen? There's just something supernatural. So on a regular basis, when we come to the end of a meeting, he asked me to pronounce the priestly benediction from number 6, Yivarechecha Adonai, Vishmarecha, the Lord bless you and keep you. Ya'er Adonai Palavelecha Vihunecha, the Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yisa Adonai Panavelecha V'yasemlecha Shalom, the Lord lift his face upon you and grant you his peace. And that is a regular feature of many of the services. And I never fully realized until last night that he believes that is why they have been so supernaturally blessed, this Jew-Gentile connection. I'm sure their love for the Lord and sacrifice for the Lord is massive in that blessing. But perhaps our union is sacred in God's sight in that way. Of course, it's sacred in God's sight in many ways. All right, if you haven't heard, God has opened up 3 massive doors for us beginning in the new year. On massive international Christian TV, we're going to have 2 different programs, a 5-minute Ask Me Anything program where viewers from around the world will send in their questions, and there'll be a different one every day, 5 shows a week. And then a full preaching show, a half-hour show where I can pour my heart out and preach repentance and preach revival and preach holiness. And that will also air. That will be a once-a-week broadcast. And God has provided for all of the airtime and for most of the production costs, if you can believe that. And he's opened a 3rd door through a network that will basically get us into every home in Israel. And we have to do all this new program. So it's a massive amount of time and energy and effort. But we're recording brand new shows specifically talking to Israelis about Jesus, Yeshua. It's amazing. These are the biggest doors God has ever opened in my life in all these decades of ministry. And aside from the time and energy that we have to put into it, the funding we need is to finish off with some of the production costs and add a staff member. It's amazing how much God has provided. And so our immediate needs out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars are only tens of thousands. And we have an initial matching grant. The first 10,000 that comes in will be immediately doubled. All right. So right now, if you could help us today while we have this special opportunity, go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Just click on donate. Your one-time gift will be doubled, all right? If you can give 10 or 50 or 100 or 1,000, it'll be doubled. And you're going to help us walk through the biggest open doors God has ever set before us in our work of ministry to touch people around the world and to touch the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Will you help us today with a tax-deductible gift? It'd mean a lot to me as I minister right here in India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm here in India, Mumbai. I've got one more day here and then over to Italy. 3 days of ministry in Visakhapatnam, a day in Delhi en route over here. Pastor's meeting in a little while, and then a late night flight into Charles de Gaulle and to France, Charles de Gaulle Airport, and then from there to Turin, or Torino, as it's called in Italy. This is Michael Brown, and I am delighted to be with you. I do hope you've been enjoying the guest hosts that have been filling in for me as I've been traveling and ministering in India, and look forward to answering your questions from Italy on Friday. I have a theme on my heart here in India that I want to communicate to you in the minutes ahead, and it is the theme of rest. 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 I'm going to come to that in a moment, but first I want to share an important spiritual principle with you. It's an amazing thing, but if you remember in 2 Samuel with David, there is a raid on Ziklag. This is a location of David's men and their wives and possessions. And what happens is raiders, while David and his men are away, raiders come in, plunder the area, take the women and children, take the goods. So David and his men come back. They're absolutely mortified. Can't believe what happened. Broken before the Lord over it. So They get some of the guys together. We're going to go after them. And not everyone was taken. So some of the men are going to stay with those that are back and stay with their possessions and things like that. So they go and they catch the raiders and they kill them. And they take their spoils and they bring back their family that's been taken. And they bring back the goods. And they're going to start dividing them up among all the men. Someone said, well, wait, these guys stayed back. These guys stayed back. And we went and fought, so we get the lion's share of the goods. I mean, they shouldn't get it, right? Well, makes sense. But David said, no. And this basically becomes a principle. The ones who stay back get the same reward as the ones who go. In other words, it's teamwork. Everybody was doing a role. The ones that stayed back went on a vacation. They were on guard. They were doing what they were supposed to do. So if you are fulfilling your calling right now in your home country, well, I'm far away in India, so I've had to deal with the flights and the jet lag and the other challenges that come with international ministry. If you're one of our prayer warriors that support us in prayer, if you're one of our torchbearers, our monthly supporters that are the financial backbone of this ministry, if you're one who helps us with periodic one-time gifts as you're able, if you're one who serves our ministry in other capacities, shares what we do, goes out of your way to share our message with others, if that's you, you share in this reward. I'm here doing what I'm doing and stretching myself out, running my race for God with joy. What a privilege. And I've had the privilege of preaching the word, thousands of messages overseas, and I think I calculated I spent 3 years of my life overcoming jet lag with all the travel. What a joy and privilege. But I just want you to know, as we've had great fruit on this trip, as we've seen lives touched, as we've made a deposit again in new workers that are going to go out and plant churches and do the work of God, and we get to minister encouragement to those who preach the gospel and been beaten for it, been persecuted for it, you share in the reward. One day, we're going to stand before God, and God's going to divide up rewards for us, and we're going to be startled. When did I do this? When did I do that? Well, we did it together, and I'm going to be startled by what God does in his graciousness towards me as well. So thank you for your partnership in the gospel. Together, we are making a difference. Many, many lives are being touched.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for being part of our broadcast from India today, Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you, delighted to serve as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. The theme of rest. We come to the end of a busy year, many of you pushing hard with family, with work, with ministry responsibilities, with the weight of life upon you. And if you're running your race, hey, I'm running mine. And sure, look forward to winding down towards the end of the year, getting a little extra rest, catching up just on quiet things and time alone with God, and maybe getting some clutter cleared out and some extra family time. Hopefully many of you will be able to do that as well. But we are called to run our race, are we not? We are called to endure hardship as good soldiers of the Messiah. I mean, this is scriptural. We are called to be disciplined. We are called to persevere. And yet, God gives us rest. And you say, how do the two work together? I want to share a principle. I've been meditating on it here in India as well. And it's from Psalm 127. And it says this: unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. So the first thing is, you can try your hardest. You can push and push and push and push and push and push. And if God's not in it, your best efforts are going to fall short. If God's not in it, your greatest efforts are going to fall short. You will not produce the work that you want to produce. You will not see the fruit that you want to see. And it doesn't matter how Herculean your sacrifices and your efforts are. If the Lord does not build a house, those who build it labor in vain. If the Lord does not watch over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain because he's not going to be able to protect it. Conversely, if the Lord does build a house, those who build it do not labor in vain. If the Lord does watch over the city, the watchman does not stay awake in vain. Now look at this. It is vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Let me read that in a couple of other translations. That was the ESV. King James: it is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. NIV: in vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Let me read from the NLT. It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning to late at night, anxiously working for food to eat, for God gives rest to his loved ones. New Jewish Version: in vain you rise early and stay up late, you who toil for the bread you eat, he provides as much for his loved ones while they sleep. The point here is that we can strive and try so hard to make things happen, make things work, produce, get the job done. And yet, when we go to sleep and rest, God continues to work on our behalf. Here, it would be like this. You want the best farm in the world. You want it to produce the best fruit and the best vegetables. And every morning you get up way before sunrise and you just walk around and look at every plant and every tree and you inspect it. And then you start to dig things up to make sure, okay, is this seed growing all right? Is this growing okay? And then you've got your sprinklers are supposed to go on at certain times of the day and the night. They run by themselves, but you stay up late to make sure those work. And at the end of the day, your neighbor who's also a farmer, he's been working hard, he's been plowing, he's been sowing the seeds, he's been making sure things are going well, but he's sleeping at night and God's giving increase to his farm the same way. There is a place of rest, and I think that some of us sometimes are so eager to see God's work done, We're so eager to see the gospel go forward. We're so eager to see our kids solid in the Lord. We're so eager to see our business succeed. We're so eager to see things happen that are good and commendable. But we overwork, we push ourselves above and beyond. We don't find that place of rest. There's no Sabbath rest. There's no place of rest that we find in God. As a result of which, we burn ourselves out. I don't say this to condemn. There's so many devoted pastors and shepherds, and you care so much about your flock, and you've got limited budget, and you're trying to meet every need. And hey, only God can meet every need. Some years ago, I was talking to a friend of ours, a good friend of Nancy's and mine, and I said to her, you know, I try to answer emails from grads whenever they email day or night. I mean, if I see it, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I'm able to answer it, I'm going to stop if I can and answer it. And if it's a crazy time of the day or night, if I see it in the middle of the night, I wake up a little while and I see an email from them, I'm going to respond. I said, I want to be there for the grads all the time. And this friend said to us, Mike, only God is there all the time. So this is not an excuse for laziness. I mean, there's no possible way you could read the Bible and come away with an ethic of laziness. Just the book of Proverbs alone would demolish that mindset forever. But there is a place of rest. You labor, you do your job, you fulfill your responsibilities, and you step back and you rest. Yeah, the world is still in strife. Yeah, there's still people that need to be saved. Yeah, there's still things that need to be prayed for. Yeah, there's still people that need to be visited. Yeah, there's still a poor person that needs help and a starving person that needs help. We can't meet every need of every person 24/7. But we labor in vain when we push beyond the calling of God. And over the years, I've had to learn to discipline myself to rest. And not only is it rejuvenating, not only is it life-giving, not only does it give more energy so that after resting, you can run even more effectively, but it also causes you to lean even more on the Lord. It brings you to a place of greater faith and greater dependence because you're looking to Him to do what He can do. And what's fascinating is if you read the rest of the psalm, the focus is on sons, on a man's sons, and how they will basically fight his battles, and he can do what fathers do with the city gate and what elders do, and his sons can carry on the legacy. It's that same rest principle, if you get it, if you grasp it, if you can hear that, that you pour into others, and now they help carry that load so that it's not always and only on you. And then what does Jesus say? What does Yeshua say at the end of Matthew 11? It's a strategically positioned verse. There has been controversy, religious controversy over his ministry. He's been attacked. And you know, this is an ongoing theme. And there's controversy about, you know, John the Immerser, and what was he, who was he, and who are you? And Jesus begins to rebuke the cities that saw his great mighty miracles and didn't repent. And then he steps back and he thanks the Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that he's hidden these things from the wise and understanding, revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for such was your gracious will. This is pleasing in your sight. And then he goes on about all things have been handed to him by his Father and revelation from the Father. And it says in verse 28, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I'm gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, meaning my yoke fits just right, and my burden is light. The teachers of the law would speak of the yoke of the Torah, the yoke of the kingdom. He said, hey, take my yoke on you. And notice, this is the same Jesus who calls us to leave everything and follow him, the same Jesus that calls us to take up our cross, the same Jesus who doesn't tolerate our excuses. What does he say? Come to me, and you'll find rest for your souls. And what follows immediately after? A battle over legalistic issues. a battle over Jewish traditions, which Jesus exposed as getting in the way of the spirit of the Sabbath. So he's saying, you want real Sabbath rest, you'll find it in me. It's fine to have a day of Sabbath rest, but the ultimate Sabbath rest is found in him. So here's an invitation. Come to that place of rest, of acceptance, of knowing your sins are forgiven, of knowing you're loved by the Father, of knowing it's his grace working in you that does the work and not your endless striving and running around like a chicken with its head cut off. And once you find that place of rest, breathe deep, learn to live in it. From that place of rest, run your race so as to win. I hope this has ministered to you as I share from India.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In the last segment, I was reading to you from Psalm 127 and sharing some thoughts from there. I want to share some thoughts from Psalm 126. This is Michael Brown coming away from Mumbai, India. And please do pray for grace. Still have a meeting, one more meeting to do here in India to finish out my time here, and then the journey to Italy, and then several meetings in Italy. Sharing with young people, should be a large crowd of young Italian men and women, sharing together with my friend Avner Boski, who's on his way over from Israel, as we share with them the importance of Israel to them as believers. These could be breakthrough meetings in Italy. So please do pray for grace as I meet with pastors in Mumbai at a small closed meeting in a little while, and then the meetings in Italy that'll be Friday and Saturday, and God willing, I head home on Sunday. But some of you have prayed for things for years, and you have sown with tears, you have prayed with tears, you have given with tears, and I want to encourage you that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And Psalm 126 is a psalm with very, very different emotions. Very, very different emotions. Let's take a read through it. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, this is speaking of coming out of exile, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears will reap with shouts of joy. Why would you sow in tears? I've often thought about that, and I commented a little bit here and there over the years on it, but why would you sow in tears? Could be that most of your people are in exile, and you're there with very few others trying to produce a harvest for sustenance. Could be that the ground and the conditions are not conducive to sowing, and there just seems to be no hope for the future. Those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. So as we're getting closer and closer to the end of the year, I just want to encourage you that God is not deaf to your cries. God is not blind to your tears. It's not that we force him to do something that he doesn't want to do, but we are his co-workers, his fellow laborers. And because of that, he gives us the privilege of praying. He gives us the privilege of working together with him. He responds to our prayers. He calls us to fast. He calls us to seek him with brokenness and tears. And out of that, something wonderful, something glorious, something very, very special is birthed. And I want to encourage you that no prayer prayed in faith according to the will of God, Not a single prayer is prayed in vain. If you pray to the Father, if you've prayed in faith, if you're praying according to the will of God, you can be sure those prayers are making a difference. Tears that you've shed for loved ones and pain and brokenness and agony of heart, those prayers have not been in vain. Those tears have not been shed in vain. And I was looking at journal entries when I was flying from, where was it, Chicago to Delhi in India this past Friday, going through some key journal entries over the last year and then noticing ones from some years earlier. And years back, I had been so terribly burdened to get the message out that God had given me. I had been so terribly burdened to reach more and more and more people with the message of the gospel and to see revival and to help spark moral and cultural revolution. And I was on my knees, I think it was late at night, and I cried out from the bottom of my heart, God, give me a voice. And yes, we had touched many people by that time and had a voice through preaching and teaching and a voice through writing, traveling and speaking. And yet I was so desperately burdened by the condition of the world and by the message that God had given me that I knew could help, that all I could do was cry out from the depth of my being. And I was stunned when I looked back at that some months ago and I realized voice, that's the thing. Wherever I go, people come up to me and say, thank you for being a voice. Thank you for being my voice. I mean, I hear it constantly from folks. Thanks for being our voice. And I'm introduced every day on the radio as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I say that to encourage you. God does pay attention. And most of the time, the bigger things, the better things, the most important things take the longest. Here I am, 61 years old, and going on 62 next March, feeling young, fresh, ready to run my race with even greater zeal in the days ahead. And it's so interesting that God is opening bigger doors now than a year ago, than 5 years ago, than 10 years ago, than 20 years ago. And he's just swung open these massive doors that are going to enable us on massive international Christian TV to reach people with powerful preached messages, to reach people with short teachings, and to reach into every home in Israel with the good news of the gospel. Three different doors on two different stations. I shared it earlier in the last half hour before this. I want to share it again with you. To me, just another sign of God's faithfulness in hearing the prayers, hearing our cries that have been lifted up to him these many years for revival, for the Great Commission, for the salvation of Israel, for moral and cultural revolution. And if you didn't hear the good news, the God has provided for the airtime. God has provided for much of the production. And now we have to add staff, we have to add some video equipment, and we will, and everything I mentioned now, plus we'll be able to put out even more on a daily basis on our own YouTube channel. So we're just asking you to partner with us. It's a sacred time. It's a sacred opportunity. And out of a budget of what could be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, there are tens of thousands that we have to meet right now. So it is incredible what God supernaturally provided. So if you could stand with us, I want to mention again that a pastor in his church graciously said the first 10,000 that comes in, we're going to double. So your gift of $50 becomes $100. Your gift of 100 becomes 200. Your gift of 1,000 becomes 2,000. Whatever you can do, no gift is too large or small. Go to the website, go to askdrbrown.org, click on donate, askdrbrown.org, click on donate. Or if you want a text to give, it's 929-CHANGE-1. 929-CHANGE-1. That's 929-242-6431 as we change the world together. 929-CHANGE-1. Type that in, type in the amount you want to text, and then send it along. And the dialog box is real simple. Hey, what amazing days lie ahead. Thank you for standing with us. My bottom line today, you've prayed, you've wept, you've sown in tears. You will reap with joy.